I would never say as an abstraction that capitalist societies that divide labor in the ways you're talking about are inevitably racist as an abstraction, because race was invented. So the second book argues that the rise of capitalism and the rise of racism are the same process. We live in the world as it came to us from history. The world that I write about in the first book is a world that has come to us from history. So, no, it would be misread as an abstract structuralist thing that says capitalism, by its very nature, makes things inevitable. Capitalism, as it developed in history, makes racism part of the process of the development of capitalism.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of BungaCast. My name is Alex Gurevich. I am a contributing editor here at BungaCast. Today, I am coming to you from Baltimore, Maryland, where my guest is Paul Gomberg, who is an excellent political philosopher with an even more remarkable intellectual and political biography, someone I admire greatly. As a man of intellectual seriousness and true political principle and commitment. Paul is a retired professor of philosophy from Chicago State University who has been a research associate at University of California, Davis for the past decade. And we are here because Paul is presenting his new book, Anti-Racism as Communism, at the American Philosophical Association. I first came across Paul's work when a friend recommended his remarkable book, How to Make Opportunity Equal, Race and Contributive Justice, which advances a really remarkable Marxist theory of work and justice by way of a theory of race and the capitalist division of labor. And more recently, he's come out with this book that we're talking about at the conference here, which is called, as I mentioned, Anti-Racism as Communism, published by Bloomsbury. Paul's books develop original and deep Marxist arguments for what makes racism wrong, why racism cannot be eradicated without overcoming capitalism, and the limits of many contemporary anti-racist arguments. He is also a committed Marxist who has been involved in communist politics for more than a half century, including street fights with the KKK in Missouri, the Harvard strike against Vietnam in Boston in 1969, for which he was suspended from Harvard for a year, and a long-standing, still ongoing membership in the Progressive Labor Party. Welcome to the podcast, Paul.
Well, thank you, Alex.
So, Paul, I wanted to start with a vignette from your recent book. You relate a moment there in which a black philosopher emails you and says, I think in an encouraging way, quote, "I wish you all success, including in your efforts teaching philosophy to my people." You then write back to him and asked, "Is it okay if I think of them as my people too?" Now, this vignette plays a role, all kinds of roles, actually, in the book. The one that it plays most directly is as a kind of example for explicating your approach to race and racism, which you call alienating race. So could you tell us a little bit, first, what was going on in this vignette? Give us a little bit of the background, including maybe some of the experiences in your life like these that have shaped your interest in racial injustice and why it's played such a big role in what are otherwise works clearly of Marxist theory.
This philosopher and I had very friendly conversations at a conference on the moral legacy of slavery. And we talked and we got along quite well. When he said to me, "I wish you all success in teaching philosophy to my people," it brought to mind that for him, I was not his people because I'm socially perceived as being white. The students that I teach are socially perceived as being black, as is the philosopher. If I worked within the framework of the racial identities that racist society gives to us, then for me, my students would have to be your people, not my people. But I never thought of them that way. And I don't think I could be an effective teacher if I didn't think of them as being my people. But clearly, if I accept the racial categories of capitalism, which I'll sometimes say because I'm a revolutionary communist, the enemy's categories, if I accept those categories, then I'm forced to think of them as not my people. So what I do in the classroom is I identify with them. But how can that be? Well, I'm not working inside racial categories. I'm working inside categories of class, that we're all members of the same class. We're all oppressed by the same capitalist class. We're not oppressed equally, and our experiences are not the same. But we have a shared interest in destroying the oppression that the capitalists visit upon us, even if not equally. These are my people.
So one thing that I liked about the way, that's very helpful as a kind of first cut, as how you want to reject certain socially imposed categories of race. But I wanted to ask a little bit more about this way of talking about alienating race, how we ought to alienate race, because I wanted to know what it looks to you practically. In the book, it's clear enough. It's as you describe. There's no reason to accept society's description of us. We're all human beings. Why can't we recognize the humanity within all of us? Very basic kind of, nevertheless, sometimes hard to come by thought. But what does it look like practically to alienate race? What does it mean to live it? Is this an inner disposition? Is it sort of a psychological attitude? Or is it an activity? What does it mean, practically speaking, to you?
Well, what I should have written more consistently than I did, although I did write it sometimes, but not enough, was that we strive to alienate race. Can we succeed? No. We cannot fully succeed in alienating race till we destroy racist society. So what does it mean? It means that we live in the enemy's world, and to the extent that we live in the enemy's world, we to some extent think within the categories of the enemy's world. But as communists, as revolutionaries, we reject that world. We dedicate our lives to destroying that world and building a world where race does not exist. But that means, as I said, I alluded to Du Bois's discussion of double consciousness, where he sees the world as a human being, and then he realizes that the white people he knows are seeing him not as a human being, but as a Negro. And I'm saying something like that occurs for revolutionaries, that we strive to see each other through categories which do not yet exist or prevail within society. And we view the society we live on as one that we're thrust into and is imposed upon us and that we seek to reject. But do we reject it all the time? 24/7 without exception? No, of course not. We go to the store, we buy groceries, we walk down the street, and we know that within